It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more.
Hello?
Tri-Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, hey, y'all, and welcome to another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, if you love gardening, you're going to love tonight's guest. Dee Nash is joining us to talk about her new book, The 20-30-something Guide to Gardening. Now, it is a no-fuss, down-and-dirty gardening one-on-one, 101 for anyone who wants to grow stuff. And I can't wait to hear what she has to say. It's a real no-nonsense approach. And this book is a guide that will take you from start to finish in the garden. And we're so excited to have her with us tonight. Now, she's also a rose lover. And as you can imagine, we can't wait to talk to her about that, too.
You know, when I first started looking for garden blogs to follow, Dee was the first one I found, and I've been following her adventures ever since. So I'm super excited to have Dee with us. And she's in the virtual studio, and she's ready to go. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat coming your way.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mice, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Hey, Dee, welcome to Rose Chat.
Hey, Teresa. Hey, Chris. How are you guys?
We're great. Dee, tonight we're going to start out by chatting about Dee the gardener. So we want to know, who inspired you to become a gardener?
Oh, like so many people, it was my grandmother, my grandma Nita. She let me toddle behind her, and my first memories are being right behind her in the garden and her showing me certain things. So she meant so much to me. I can still see her garden in my mind to this day.
What's some of the advice that she passed on to you?
Well, I remember when, you know, the thing is she didn't stand over me and tell me what to do. It was just so natural. You know, I was a little kid, and I remember I saw cabbage butterflies flitting around her cabbages, and I was so excited because I was little. And she said, oh, those are bad. She said, those are actually moths. And then she showed me the little worm and how the worm ate through the cabbages. And that was probably my very first lesson in gardening.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, she was sweet.
It's so nice to have those people in our life that inspire us and that we can follow literally in their footsteps.
Yeah, I think it's because of her that I love roses so much, too, because she had a red rose that climbed up on her porch, and I used to sit and read books in the porch swing.
Was it a fragrant one?
Yes, it was fragrant. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Yes, it was fragrant, and it was a classic tea fragrance. It was a beautiful rose. I don't know what variety. She didn't know.
Well, anytime we can attach the beauty with the fragrance, just is more, just that deeper, stronger memory. I have the same kind of memories just being in my great-grandmother's garden, and I didn't know. It was just like a big shrubby hedge, and I didn't know what it was, but for years I was looking for that fragrance that I found in that shrubby hedge. So those things are really special. Your blog is called Red Dirt Rambling, and I'm wondering, what's it like to garden in red dirt?
Red dirt. You know, it depends on where you live in the state. I'm fortunate enough that I live on the east side of the state, and because of that, I have sandy red soil from the red sandstone, but there's also red clay, and it's kind of, you know, in Oklahoma City and further west, they have a lot of red clay, and I just have pockets of it. So that's not so bad. You can amend both of them, but it's a whole lot easier to get good drainage with sandy soil than it is with clay.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we're on the subject of clay and dirt, could you give us some tips for keeping our soil healthy?
Well, when somebody comes to me who just has flat-out clay soil like you make bricks with, I just say, you know, mound up the soil and either create a berm or a raised bed. You can amend the soil and get it, you know, friable just like any other soil, but it takes, in my opinion, years or a whole lot of amendments. And that's a lot of back-breaking work, and I don't think everyone wants to go that hard. So why not just mound up the soil so that you get the good drainage and, you know, and the water can pierce it and get to the roots and stuff. And the other thing is I would say use stuff that you have on the property. If you have trees, don't bag up those leaves and put them on the curb. Shred them and put them on your beds instead. There isn't anything better than shredded leaves and manure.
Where I live, we have gray, icky-looking clay, and we have had to amend and amend and amend and dig and add. And so when people are in my garden and they kind of dig around, they're going, this is wonderful soil. And I go, yes, it's the best money can buy. So
exactly.
It did not come cheap or easy.
No, it's not cheap or easy. That's true. And even though I even brought in some soil for some of my beds when I was first making my beds for my roses and even for my vegetables, I brought in soil. And I'm proud to say, yeah, I bought soil. Who cares?
We brought it in by the triaxle truckload because there was no way anything was going to grow in what they left us when we built the house.
Yeah, they scrape off all that top layer, and so, you know, you're down to that subsoil, which is lousy most any place you live, and unless you're in Washington State, maybe, but in the South especially.
Yes. Well, Dean, we want to talk about your amazing book, and I know it's written for the 20, 30-something in mind, as Chris said, but I would say it is a super great resource for anyone who's new to gardening or new to gardening in a smaller space. You've done a wonderful job just making it very, very practical. But I want to know, why did you decide to write a book in the first place?
Well, the subtitle does say, you know, for anyone. And we made sure and put that in there because we wanted to make people feel like anybody could use the book. But I reached out to the millennial generation because I have 4 kids in or knocking on the door of that generation. I have one that's 37, one that's 21, one that's 19, and one that's 15 and a half. And I've helped them learn how to garden growing up, but I realized that their friends didn't know how to garden. And I wanted to help them too because they're very interested in gardening and they're a very smart generation, but they've spent a lot of time indoors. So I wanted to help them.
Well, that's a great reason. And I would say to millennials, my life, it's the same thing. Plus you add that they are living in space, in homes and in houses that they just don't have the same kind of yards that maybe they grew up with. Maybe all they have is a balcony. I know that is the way it is with the kids in my life. So this is just perfect because either you have a small space or just a balcony, you've opened up the door to what people could really do. So it's wonderful.
Well,
but
thank
I'm
you
sure
so
we
much. I appreciate that. We started out with containers because if you're going to just get started in gardening, containers is probably the easiest way you can go. And, you know, you can grow a lot of food in containers. So I wanted to start there and then move on to raised beds because I wanted to start with people who might be in apartments or duplexes, and then maybe they, you know, go out and buy a home, you know, a house, and so they have a small yard. And I wanted them to feel like they could garden too. There's no reason to feel like you have to have an acreage to garden. I happen to have an acreage, but I didn't until I was, gosh, I think I was in my, well, when I met Bill, so 27, 28.
Wow. Well, now, in your book, you spend quite a bit of time talking about raised beds. And, you know, we were talking before the show started about my next-door neighbor, and we helped him build a raised bed this year and grow some vegetables. I know our listeners, I think, would be very interested to hear just some tips on building a raised bed and then, you know, how to get started growing in one.
Okay, we started, you know, there's a whole section in the book that is dedicated to building a raised bed, but I wanted people to feel like you can do the standard deal where you attach boards together, and usually they're either 4x4 or 4x8 or 4x12. Those are the standard measurements. You want them to be 4 feet across because you can still reach to the middle, and they need to be about 12 to 18 inches deep, so that you can accommodate root vegetables in addition to vegetables like tomatoes that have deep root systems. But I also wanted to point out, and I do in the book too, that there's some great, availability of other ways to grow in a raised bed situation. And one is the big bag bed, which is put out by Grow Pots. And I think that's the name of the company, but I don't have it right in front of me. But the big bag bed is 13 and a half feet of growing space, and you'd simply just unfold it, and then you put in the soil, and you get started, you know, with water. And so I think it's a great way to start. Like, say you move into a house, but you don't know you're going to stay there very long. Instead of building a raised bed, you could do something like that. There are also some modular beds that you can buy online that snap together, and they're made of a heavy plastic, and they even come in colors like purple and orange and stuff like that. So you can make a really pretty raised bed.
Yeah, and too, I think those vibrant colors are really appeal to kids and young folks, and you know me, I just want the planks.
Yeah, well, I understand. I started with the planks too, and I don't know. These days, I might go with something bright because I love those tomato cages that have the really bright colors, and I use those in my raised beds. But I think it's a fun way to do it. You know, color's so in now.
Dee, I'm sure we have some listeners out there who are dreaming of writing their own book. Do you have any advice for them?
Advice on writing a book. Okay, well, here's how I broke down this book. I had already written some books that were novels that never published, so I was familiar with word count. So that's always nice. But I write articles all the time, and I just viewed each little section as a series of, like they were a series of articles. So you start out with explaining just about how to do containers, and then you know, you move on to materials for containers. And I viewed each one of those as a separate section. And the way books are written now, you hand in your work all along the process. So your editor will be looking at your work and sending back pages for you to look at. And so you'll be writing and editing all in the same, you know, all at the same time pretty much. And that's a different process from the way books used to be published.
Mm-hmm. So it's a much more interactive, collaborative process with the publisher, I guess, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, at least with my publisher, it was very interactive, and I actually was making changes on the PDF, like, you know, the day before Christmas. So I know I was because I was making fudge, and my editor called because there were some changes that we needed to make, some corrections on the PDF, and I told her to hang on just a second while I poured out the fudge. So, you know... And it came out in February. So it's a pretty quick process these days, too.
Wow.
Do you
find
have
a publisher.
Any other books on the way?
I'm sorry, did you ask me if I'm doing any more?
Uh-huh.
You know, I have more books in me, I think, but I have not proposed a new book yet. I'm still tired from the process of writing it and promoting it. I can't think that well right at the moment.
Yeah. So what's that like? You've sort of done a mini book tour this year. I've been following you on Facebook, and, you know, it seems like every time I turn around, you're at a book club or a bookshop or, you know, up on the, up at the podium talking about your book.
I did travel kind of all over the United States, and that was really fun, and I'm available for speaking engagements if anyone wants me to come speak and lets me sell my books after, because I want to spread the word of gardening to everybody. I love gardening, and I want everyone else to love it as much as I do. I went to all over. Let's see. Gosh, I went to Seattle, and I went to Augusta, Georgia, and Savannah, Georgia, and Austin, Texas, and Tulsa, and I'm sure there's more places I'm not thinking of. And I don't want to slide anybody, but I was all over. It was fun.
Yeah. So anybody that Dee left out, she would just include them in just a great big y'all.
Y'all. That's right.
Yeah,
I love y'all.
Y'all.
Yeah. Nobody says that quite like Chris.
No, Chris says it better than I do because I've got the Oklahoma accent. He's got the, he's got the deep Southern accent.
Yeah. You know, I've got that Tennessee, Alabama thing going on. So.
Yeah, you kind of move around a little.
Yeah.
Well, he cannot disguise his voice at all.
No, it's all warm and friendly, too. Like a cup of cocoa.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice. Dee, in your book, you also talk about perennial herbs and starting an herb garden. And, you know, that's one of the things that my neighbors wanted to do. They wanted some rosemary and thyme and some chives in their garden. And do you have any quick tips on getting started with a little perennial herb garden?
You know, if I'm going to start a perennial herb garden, the first thing I'm going to do is run to the store or the nursery or even the box store, and I'm going to buy some bonnie plants. Because for perennial herbs, there's, in my opinion, no reason to start them from seed. They've got all the herbs you could possibly want in the perennial line. And then, you know, start basil and some of the other herbs that are annuals from seed. But you don't have to start rosemary from seed. That'd take too long, and, you know, we're all about instant gratification.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I love bonnie plants. You know, I'm give a little shout-out to bonnie plants, mm-hmm. Union Springs, Alabama, and a great company and just awesome plants. I mean, I've never gotten a bad plant from them. Yeah,
they are a great company, and some of their plants are also grown in Oklahoma now, and so they are very fresh when they get to your nursery. Everywhere I've ever been that I've seen them, they're just as fresh as they can be. So I buy bonnie plants. I had to replace my rosemary this past year because we had such a cold winter last winter that it was an old plant. It was huge. It finally succumbed, so I just ran to the store and bought a new one, stuck it in there. The one thing I would say about herbs is it needs to be really good, well-drained soil, and they don't need quite so much fertilization as some of the other plants do, because most herbs, not all, but most herbs are grown in Mediterranean climates, and so they like that kind of rocky, lean soil.
Dee, another one of the sections of your book talks about gardening for the senses, and we talked a little bit earlier about fragrance. Could you share with our listeners what that means to you, gardening for the senses?
That's my favorite. I think I drew four plans for the book, and the last plan, the sensory garden, was in the round, and it was my favorite garden because we incorporated both ornamental plants and edible plants in it, and that really is how I garden. I mix all my plants together. I do have my corn kind of by itself, and I do have a traditional vegetable garden, but I also mix vegetables in with all my ornamental stuff. And for senses, I used all five senses. So, you know, grasses that feel good to the touch, lamb's ear. I named several plants that you can do for that, and I said to plant those along the edge of pathways so that people will reach out and touch them. And, you know, beautiful plants for fragrance like heliotrope, roses. I have roses in there. There are so many great plants. Alyssum is another really good plant for smell. But, you know, fragrance is a funny thing. I think what I might say, like, for example, even when you're talking about roses, you guys know this too. Roses have all different scents. And so you might tell someone that a certain rose is highly scented, right? And then they smell it, and to them it doesn't smell anything like the raspberry smell that you thought it smelled like. So that's the same way with all sensory, when you're talking about scent. So what smells good to one person might not smell good to another person. So I encourage people to go out and sniff plants and see what they really like. And then, of course, the other senses too. You can hear grasses rustling in the wind. You can taste the beautiful vegetables, you know, things like that.
I think that's so important. Now that I have a little grandson, I want him to experience all the senses in the garden.
I know. I think that, you know, that was one of the things, like up at church, Up at my church, we have a school attached to it, and I put lamb's ear all down the front of the bed. And one day, a little boy was walking into school with his daddy, and he reached down to touch the lamb's ear, and his dad kind of jerked him a little bit because I was out there working. And he said, "Don't touch that." And I said, "No, no, he needs to touch it." And I just was really, it was a really sweet moment because I said, I want him to touch it. That's why I put it there.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
I don't have lamb's ear right now, but I'm going to have to plant some before next summer.
If you plant lamb's ear, plant the one with the larger leaves. There's several different kinds, but there's one that has real big leaves, and I think it's the prettiest, and it does best in the heat.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned roses, and of all the roses you've grown through the years, we're interested to know, what are your favorites?
Oh, my favorites. Oh, gosh. There's been so many. So many roses have lived here over the last 25 years. Well, my favorite rose of all time is Carefree Beauty. And it's not because its scent is so great. I mean, it has kind of a sweet scent mixed with tea. It's okay. But it is scented. But it's highly disease resistant. And my theory is anybody can grow it. And anybody can...
Is that Dr. Buck rose?
Yeah, it's one of the... It's the most famous of Dr. Buck's roses because it was actually introduced to commerce. You know, it wasn't one that he just gave to his family and friends. He actually introduced it in 1977. But it has a beautiful clear pink with a little bit of a silvery look, so I really love it. I love Belinda's Dream, which is a Dr. Basie rose. And I love it for because it looks like Tiffany, which is one of its parents or grandparents. It has that beautiful silver. And I always tell people that if they're addicted to hybrid teas but they don't want to spray anymore, I say, you know, start with that one. Start with Belinda's Pink because, Belinda's Dream, sorry. Belinda's Dream because it's got that look, but you don't have to spray it, which, you know, I don't spray any in my garden. My garden's all organic, so I don't spray anything. Let me think of some other ones that I really love. Oh, I love Renda Violette. I don't have it right now, but I love the scent of it. Madame Isaac Pierre, love that one.
Oh,
the real famous one, I'm not going to be able to think of it. It's a bishop. Anyway, I like, there's so many that I love right now. Dame de Cour, Lady of My Heart. I love that one. Dame de Cour smells good. It's a beautiful red. I incorporated more red and yellow in the last few years because I wanted a more dramatic look, and it's one of my favorites. So those are just some. I mean, there's so many.
Well, I'll tell you, I can highly recommend Belinda's Dream. It we bought a shrub of that in a like a quart pot 2 years ago, planted it in a spot, and a bunch of elephant ears came up and shaded it, and I didn't think it was going to live, so we dug it up and moved it to another place, and this year it has just exploded.
Yeah, it's a great rose.
Oh,
easy
yeah,
to
yeah.
grow. Grows on its own roots usually. But the only thing I have to say about it is, and you just said it, it can't handle shade. You know, it's a Texas rose, and it's used to being grown out in the middle of the sun, and that's where it wants to grow. And so one of mine got a little bit shaded, and it was really unhappy, and I cut a bunch of stuff back that was shading it, and now it's happy again. It's a great rose, easy to grow.
I had never grown that one before until I went to the Biltmore, and they have the most beautiful bed of Belinda's Dream. Oh, my goodness. It is gorgeous.
And don't you think it looks like a tea rose?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it looks, well, really a hybrid tea, not really a tea, because if it looked like a tea rose, its neck would droop, because that's what tea roses do. But I do love tea roses also. You know what? We should talk a little bit about English roses. I like a lot of those, too. Graham Thomas. My favorite's Darcy. I don't know if it's pronounced Bussell or Bussell. I love that one. Beautiful rose. Very, very disease-resistant. Likes the south, likes the heat. So those are some good ones. Graham Thomas is just such a great rose. Gertrude Jekyll is good. See, some of those are these older ones. I have Heritage. I have Abraham Darby.
Do you grow Benjamin Britten?
No, but I would like to get it. I've heard it's very good.
It is very good. And, you know, and here in Alabama and probably in Oklahoma, it'll grow like a climber. We've got two shrubs in there, probably 10.5 foot tall right now.
Yeah, they want to, a lot of them, like Grime Thomas does that too, because, mm-hmm. you know, they're not used to that heat, so they just go nuts and grow really tall and usually very, very vertical. You know, not so much a horizontal mm-hmm. climber, but a real
right.
vertical climber, like Altissimo, which isn't an English mm-hmm. rose, but it's a very vertical climber.
Yeah, our neighbors are.
Sorry, y'all.
I was given a gift this year of the Generous Gardener. Have you ever grown that one?
No, but I've also heard it's really good. Is it good for you?
Oh, it's wonderful. This is first year. It is definitely a climber. It's been beautiful. It's been disease resistant. It's very. I highly recommend it.
Okay, good. Now I've got two I need to get.
Well, the reality of your garden is that we saw some really gorgeous roses in your garden, and then we saw them disappear. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I hate to even talk about it because I feel like I'm Typhoid Mary at the party. It's rose rosette disease. Rose rosette disease is a serious, serious problem in Oklahoma. It's serious in many of the places in the state that are more urban, and it oddly is in my garden. I have to think I brought in a rose that had it, you know, and I didn't know, or had the mites on it. I don't know how it got here because mm-hmm. I don't have any Rosa multiflora anywhere around me. So, but it's a bad deal, and I've lost count how many I've lost. I lost all my old climbers. I lost New Dawn, Climbing Old Blush, Zephyrine Druin. I lost an old blush shrub. Oh, there's so many. I lost a Baron Prevost. That was the other one I was trying to think of that I love so much. But, you know, here's the thing. If I see it, I pull them out, and then I'm going to wait and not put a rose back in that same spot for a while, and I put something else instead. But that doesn't mean that I've totally given up on roses. Right now, I refuse to do that. So.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think with any disease that affects plants, you just have to address the issue and move on. You know, and like you said, diseases like in Alabama, we are plagued with black spot. And, you know, you go to California where Teresa's at this evening, and, you know, that's not an issue out there. So
no.
You just have to kind of address problems in the garden as they happen, whether you're growing roses or vegetables, you know, and you just kind of deal with it and press forward.
I am really glad to see people talking about it. You know, when I first saw it in my garden, I didn't even know what it was years ago. I had to read Nan's post out of Connecticut to find out what it was. But it concerns me that some people are suggesting that you can just cut off the damage and go on, and that's not a good thing. I think one thing you can do on your healthy roses is give them as late a clipping as you possibly can, you know, without getting them into frost damage problems, because they say that the mites like to be in the tips of the roses, and so I think that's a really good way to be proactive, and you bag that stuff or burn it and get it away from your garden. And then if you see it, you know, dig the rose bush up and let it go. Roses aren't that expensive. It's not like it's a $200 daylily, and those do die too, especially,
yeah,
especially if it's a $200 daylily. And so, you know, just let it go and then put something else there and then put a rose in another spot. And don't grow your roses too close together because it makes it easier for that stupid mite to crawl over to the next bush because it is wingless. But the truth is somewhere where the wind blows, like Oklahoma, it might as well have wings because, you know, it blows in. And we've been trying to get the word out, and I think we're doing a pretty good job. I think, you know, that's what it's going to take. And I personally think this will blow through the United States, and then maybe, you know, things will calm down again.
Right. Well, and you know, too, the part of the role of the American Rose Society is through their educational trusts and their research endowments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with UT Knoxville and I know Texas A&M, you know, there are studies currently underway, you know, to figure out all manner of rose diseases and how we can help eradicate them. So, you know,
right.
I think if we hit it on both fronts, we'll eventually get it.
I think we will, too. And, you know, Oklahoma State University is also involved with the American Rose Society, too. And they brought out some really good information in the last year that was very helpful, I thought. And also Arkansas University. I know that they're involved in it, too, and that they've been given money to pursue it by some of the rose breeders. And that's understandable because we don't want to lose roses in the garden. Roses are, there's nothing like them. And so we need to take good care of them.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about some of the challenges in the rose garden. Now, I'd love to hear some of your greatest success stories with roses.
Well, I think my greatest success story was, gosh, there's so many. But I think just learning how to grow them well and getting to know them and being so glad that they're a part of my life. I grow so many. I have 100 and something still. I need to go out and count them. I haven't counted them lately. But, you know, learning about Dr. Buck's roses and collecting some of those and having some real success with some of them, that would probably be my biggest success, Chris, is learning about disease resistance and then going and talking to rose societies throughout the state and in other states about how you can grow roses and not use so many chemicals. I'm not one to tell people that they absolutely have to be organic just because I am, but, you know, we can all lessen our dependence on chemicals. That would probably be my biggest success.
Right. And, you know, I think things are done in with, you know, the hearts and minds of people that it's in baby steps. You know, it's not so much just stop altogether, but it's, you know, take some small steps initially to, you know, lessen your dependence on chemicals. And then, you know, over time, you've got to make a decision whether or not you're going to continue to use them. But, you know, it's a decision everybody has to come to. And sometimes
right.
if you can approach it in smaller doses, it's not so bad.
And that's what I tell everybody, too. I say, you know, just start somewhere. Because the truth is, if your roses have been used, have a lot of chemicals, and you just took them off cold turkey, I think that would be really hard on you and the roses. So, you know, do it in baby steps because there are so many pollinators in my garden, and I know that if I still did what I did back in the way, way back days, 30 years ago, I wouldn't have the number of pollinators in the garden. And I know now, to me, just for me personally, the pollinators are more important than the plants themselves. So
right.
I like pollinators. In fact, I was writing a pollinator post tonight before we started to talk. So that's important to me, and I think just having roses that smell good, I'm really encouraged by the fact that we've now figured out the gene that also has some scent, so you can get disease-resistant roses that also smell good.
That's a win-win for sure.
Boy, no kidding.
Well, Dee, before we let you go, we would like to know if you could visit any garden in the world, which one would it be?
Well, I want to go to England. That's where I want to go first.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you which. Well, okay, I would go to Great Dixter first. That's the first mm-hmm. garden I'd go to. And then, of course, I've got to go to – can I have two?
Oh, yeah.
You can
have as many
as you want.
Okay, well, I'm going to make the greatest hits route throughout England, and I'm also going to have to reach the Lakes District because I got to go up to Beatrix Potter's garden too. And and also Agatha Christie's garden. Because, you know, Agatha Christie was a great gardener too. That's why there's so many references to plants in her books. And did you know that there's one of her books where a rose solves the crime? Did you guys know that?
No.
Uh-huh.
I did not.
I taught you guys something new. The name of the book is Sad Cypress, and a rose solves the crime, and I can't tell you how because that would give it away.
Yeah, Sad Cypress. I'm going to read that book.
Sad Cypress. You're going to read it, and then you're going to write me on Facebook, and we're going to laugh about the ending. And then I would go on over to France, and, of course, I would go to Monet's garden.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm going to do that someday.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Teresa and Greg and Tina and I have been talking about a tour across the pond, as they say. So we ought to just get up a whole group and all go.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, yeah. And wouldn't you guys be fun to travel with?
We do have a good time. Yeah, crazy rose people.
Crazy rose people are us.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Zee, it's been so lovely to have you. This has been great. We wish you the best success with your book. Thank you for taking the time to write it. It's just a wonderful resource, and we just wish you much success in the garden.
Oh, thank you. Same to you guys. Thanks so much.
Now, I know our listeners are going to want to order a copy of Dee's book. Again, it is the 2030-something Garden Guide, a no-fuss, down-and-dirty guide, Gardening 101 for anyone who wants to grow stuff. Now, we placed a link to you can purchase this book on Amazon on our show page tonight at blogtalkradio.com/rosechat. Now, you can follow Dee on Twitter at Red Dirt Rambling. And on her popular blog of the same name. So I'm hope that you'll go and visit her blog, you'll buy this book, and get out and get in the gardening. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com. Or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.
Day. So.
Oh.